rich man with a million or two.
I'd live in a penthouse in a room with a view.
And if I were handsome.
Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we like to talk about Disney things.
We do.
Specifically this week, we're going to be talking about Monsters, Inc.
Yay!
The fourth Pixar movie.
Yes.
I had to count up real quick in my head.
Good job. Yeah. A plus. You passed so. Math.
Monsters, Inc. came out November 2nd, 2001, and was thought of, invented at that famous Pixar dinner lunch.
Dinner lunch.
The famous lunch where everything Pixar ever thought of was thought of.
Yep.
And so it came out of the idea of, because they had just made Toy Story after the lunch, and so, or right before the lunch, and so it came out of the idea of what else did kids know existed. Like, they knew their toys came to life afterwards, and so yeah. Then they knew that monsters lived in their closets or under their bed, and so this invention of, like, monsters, and let's do a story about monsters, all came from that. And actually, they pitched the concept and the idea to Disney, and there was a Disney animator there. It was, like, just a longtime Disney animator named Joe Grant, who suggested Monsters, Inc., and that's where they got the title from. And Joe Grant had worked on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Wow.
So he'd been there for approximately forever.
Exactly forever.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's pretty crazy that somebody...
Is he, like, an animator on Snow White, or is he, like...
I mean, he was an animator, and they said that his work had stretched back to Snow White.
He did.
So.
He must have been, like, some sort of sad little in-betweener or something. Something not prolific.
Yeah.
Snow White.
So,
wow.
That's just crazy that he's been there that long. Also, obviously, Billy Crystal was in this movie after not being Buzz Lightyear, after turning down Buzz Lightyear.
I'm kind of glad he wasn't Buzz Lightyear.
Well, now I am, like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know that his voice would have suited the role that well.
Yeah, like, it all worked out fine because Mike is fantastic.
Mike is fantastic.
And, you know, they wrote it with Billy Crystal in mind. Like, you know, when they kind of figured it out, you know, what had happened and learned that he regretted turning down Buzz Lightyear. And, you know, said, well, they'll do something tailored to his voice and to his talents. And so Billy Crystal said, you know, do what's best for your movie, but just don't forget me when something good comes around. And so they didn't.
Ta-da!
They also, John Goodman and Billy Crystal also got to record a lot of their lines together.
Which is really nice, because voice actors don't get to do that, like, ever.
No.
So, they have good chemistry.
They do, and, like, I feel like that reflects in the film.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, Mike and Sully, just could pretty much watch them talk about things forever.
Yep.
You know? So it's a very strong strength of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just these two characters talking to each other. And so I assume that came from these two guys getting to sit and interact with each other in the booth.
Yeah.
So, but Monsters, Inc. opens up with the title credits, which is just delightful.
These are my favorite title credits, like, ever. They're so cute.
It's very
so cute.
Cute. Nice little musical jazz.
I really like the score in this movie. It's all kind of jazzy.
I like the score in all these movies.
Yeah, but I really like this one especially.
So, yeah, it's Randy Newman again.
Always.
So, and so it opens up on what we'll eventually learn will be a test simulation.
Yeah.
We don't know that yet.
It's a secret for the next 6 seconds.
Yeah.
this monster is trying a test simulator.
Yes.
To scare children, because that's how they power monster world.
And when it doesn't work, they learn pretty much the entire plot of the movie. Here it is.
Yeah.
Which is, again, a really strong testament to this movie, because it does not feel like, you know, here is the plot.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's also, like, a fairly heavy plot, all things considered. Like, their company is failing, their industry is failing, mm-hmm. and eventually they're just not going to have power anymore.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, they're being powered by this one company. I'm assuming, like, this city is being powered by this company, and...
But it seems to be a general problem.
Yeah.
Because kids aren't as easy to scare anymore, is mm-hmm. the general idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's deep and, like, well thought out.
Yeah, yeah, and probably true. I mean... These days,
as true I feel as like we're exposed a to... cartoon movie about monsters can be, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like kids are less easily scared.
Yeah, I mean, but they get a lot out of this. Like, they have, you know, one point where a monster fails to scare the kids, and they're talking about, like, a kid's only six. And
yeah.
So, and they talk about how many doors they've lost this week, just how many kids haven't been able to be scared.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's kind of dense.
Yeah.
An energy crisis film.
It's very odd when you think about it, seriously, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's just, like, monsters.
Yeah.
Monsters doing silly monster things.
Yeah. And so then we meet Mike and Sully.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, like, four movies ago when they couldn't even get hair right?
Sully looks so soft and fluffy.
And this whole monster that's just hair.
Oh, he's so fluffy.
And, like, so apparently it took somewhere between 11 and 12 hours to render every single frame of Sully. Because he has exactly 2,320,413 hairs on him.
He's so fluffy.
And it moves so well.
It does. Like, and there's, like, a nice mix of colors in there, mm-hmm. and it's well lit. It's pretty.
He's but, like, lovely. It just, like, it floats when he breathes,
mm-hmm.
and the hairs move individually. It's just, it's really well done. Just, at some point, go to Wikipedia and just, like, read about the rigorous animation test that they put this hair through. And, I mean, yeah. there's so much of it. There's so much of... Talking about, like, each hair has to cast its own individual shadow,
mm-hmm.
Which they talk about. That's one of the biggest problems with Molly in the first Toy Story is there's not self-shadowing on the hair, which gives it that, like, really unrealistic look. And so...
Also, she's just kind of creepy.
Well, yeah, she's just kind of creepy.
But the hair doesn't help.
But, you know...
She looks very plastic.
Yeah, her and Andy both kind of look like Lego men with their hair. A
little bit, yeah.
And so, and then Sully's just like, here's tons and tons of hair all over his body. And,
This is just preparing them for Merida, basically.
Well, like... And just, he moves so fluidly throughout the movie.
He's got a great weight to him.
Yeah, and they talk about, like... You know, there's this big contrast, but, you know, he's this big dude, and it's really easy when you have, like, a big dude like that to make him, like, this slow, lumbery kind of character.
Yeah.
And he's not. He's, like, effectively, as they talked about, he's a football player. Like, you know, his size does not slow him down, and so he moves really well.
Yep.
And so we get a quick scene just of them basically goofing around. It sets up their character dynamic very quickly.
Like the scary feet thing.
Scary feet, scary feet, scary feet.
Yes.
I like that we get a good shot of Sully's, like, big giant armchair, and there's a hole in it for his tail.
Yes, which is precious, and Mike has a little, like, egg-shaped chair next to him. So cute.
We also see the Monsters, Inc. commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
I wish I could be more like Mike in his acceptance of, like, good things that happen to me that go terribly wrong. There's so many of those, and he's so excited regardless. It's so cute.
Yeah. Also, when they go to work, they have different doors. Like, he has a little Mikey door.
He's a little one, and Sully has a big one.
So.
I totally forgot that Mike has a car.
Yeah.
I totally forgot, because they don't do anything. It's just sitting there.
Well, they do stuff with it in Mike's new car, the short.
They do. But I have not seen that short in a very long time, so I totally forgotten that he owned a car at all.
Yeah. Incidentally, that short, which I guess we'll watch when we do all the Pixar shorts.
Yeah.
But that was going to be a scene in the movie that was just kind of cut for time, and so they melded it into the short, and it was the first Pixar short with dialogue in it. because of that.
Interesting. I hadn't really thought
about
that. A lot of them are. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. And, like, so... They, I guess because it's such a dense plot, like, they really harp on it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's understandable because they're inventing an entire economic structure for this city.
Yeah. I loved all the little things they passed on their way. There's so many good little stupid monster puns in this movie.
This had to be the most fun character design that these guys have ever dealt with.
All the character design in this movie is so good. Even all the little background monsters. All the little kid monsters are so cute and weird. Yep. But this time around, I noticed my favorite was Gary's Grocery, and it's spelled G-R-O-S-S-E-R-Y. That's really dumb. But it made me happy.
That's adorable.
Yep. There was probably a lot of really fun world building for them for these movies, especially because a lot of their movies take place in more or less like their real world.
Yeah.
So.
And even like the ones like the, you know, it's good that they waited until really The Incredibles to have like main human characters.
People, yeah.
But even, you know, before that, like their characters are like, fish for Finding Nemo, and like bugs, which look like bugs, and you know,
but they really got to have fun with character design and do a lot of cool world building for this that they really haven't done for, I wouldn't say really any other movie.
No.
Not really.
No, not really. I mean, a lot of the other stuff has been fairly limited. I mean, there's some good world building in Bug's Life.
They completely try and ignore world building entirely in Cars, which is really creepy. But, like, yeah, like, pretty much everything else is, like, you know, more or less real-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is really reflects how much fun they had making it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was tons and tons of fun to just, like, sit around and be like, here's a monster that does this. And, like, so many of these monsters only exist for the joke, like the janitor slug.
I love the janitor slug.
Like that monster.
The awkward teenage intern monsters with their, like, monster braces.
Yeah.
They're monster pimples.
So, it's pretty adorable.
So they walk to work because there's a scare shortage.
Yes.
So they're trying to conserve energy. And we meet Celia, who works as the receptionist at the front desk, who is Mike's girlfriend. And it's her birthday.
It is her birthday.
I love Celia's character design. I love her little snakes.
Hair.
Her little snakes are so cute. And she makes reference to them a couple of times.
Yeah.
And they, like, you know, they reflect her emotions a lot, and they make cute little snaky noises, and they're just precious.
No, it's pretty adorable. And we meet, I mean, first of all, I could pretty much watch just a whole movie of them going about their day to day lives.
Wandering around, yep.
Well, like it's a fairly long sequence of like the workday.
Yeah.
You know, and like how the workday works, how, you know, the doors come in and work, and how all of their machinery works, and this all comes into important play later with like, you know, what these lights mean, because you'll need to know.
It's fun to watch.
It's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
And just seeing the different monster designs and what they do and how they scare each other. It's good.
Yep.
It's very entertaining.
They go to the locker room, and I had totally forgotten that Mike wears contacts, but it's Mike, so he only has one eye, so he wears just, like, one giant, like, dinner plate-sized contact.
Yeah.
I had totally forgotten about that a little bit. Maybe Randall.
Yes.
He's terrible. So mean. He's just, like, I feel like at every workplace there's that one, like, office jerk.
Yeah.
And he's that office jerk. It's a little too relatable sometimes. You're like, God, I hate that guy.
Well, Randall's he's like a good villain because he's so standardly villainy.
Yeah.
And, like,
very ambitious.
Yeah, and it's so very clear that, like, he is a villain, and they work it really well in a way, because there's, you know, the twist at the end where there's the other villain. Oh my goodness.
So sneaky.
But, like,
they put Noose in his name. What did you expect?
Well, like, you know, a lot of times, especially in a kids movie when there is the twist of, oh, that's the bad guy.
Yeah.
There's like, there's the throw off bad guy who like was a good guy the whole time, was just misunderstood.
Snape.
And Randall's not that. Like, he's still the bad guy. And so it's really nice to, like, see him be smarmy and evil and gross and wicked and get his comeuppance for all the terrible things that he does earlier in the movie.
I do love watching this having seen Monsters University, because the whole time I noticed that he was squinting because he didn't have his glasses on. The whole time.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just cranky because he can't see and it's giving him headaches.
So... It's funny. And Steve Buscemi does a really good job.
He really does. He really does.
So, but so we meet. We also see...
Roz.
Yes, Roz.
Roz!
Who's, that Roz's voice was just a stand-in voice that really worked, and so...
Oh, was it?
That's what, yeah, it was, Bob Peterson was just doing some temporary voice work to have it in there.
It's awesome.
And that's, of course, because it's perfect.
Yeah.
And so, Roz needs paperwork from Mike, which Mike needs to go to his date, and so Sully goes back to get the paperwork, which kicks off this whole story, because Boo, who, with her door's left, and she gets into the monster world.
Yep.
Which is adorable. Boo's adorable.
Boo is so cute.
In earlier drafts of this movie, Boo was going to be six, and making her not six was the best story decision.
Because she can't talk. Mm-mm. She can't tell you stuff. She's what, like, two?
Yeah, maybe. Mary Gibbs, the name of the person who voiced Boo, and basically they just followed her around with a microphone around Pixar.
It's genius.
And just cut, you know... recorded stuff and cut the lines together for that.
It's perfect, because she acts and sounds just like a two-year-old, just wandering around, making random noises, crying aimlessly, screaming at things, you know.
Yeah, so.
It's really cute.
It's adorable and precious and funny.
Really, really
funny. It's so funny. And this might be, like, the just flat-out funniest movie that they've made.
Yeah, probably.
Because...
even with such a serious plot, it's just basically still a straight-up comedy.
Well, Mike and Sully are so funny together, and Sully's interactions with Boo are so funny.
There's a lot of situational humor and a lot of just, like, silly monster humor, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it probably is the funniest.
And also, Billy Crystal is kind of one of the... voices that can just talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And just talk and talk and talk, and it's funny the whole time.
Yep. So Boo gets out, and Sully's got her with him and brings him to the restaurant that Celia and Mike are eating at.
The restaurant, by the way, this is my entirely favorite reference that Pixar's ever done, because I fully believe it was intentional. The restaurant's called Harryhausen, which is a reference to Ray Harryhausen, who did a lot of stop-motion animation and really revolutionized the stop-motion animation industry. So I'm sure that, like, a lot of the animators, like, really look up to him, so clearly they would know that. And he made, like, Jason and the Argonauts and Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and Clash of the Titans, those kind of movies.
I loved those movies as a kid.
And so he made a movie called It Came from Beneath the Sea, which has a giant octopus in it with only six legs, because they couldn't afford to make an eight-legged octopus. And the octopus doing the sushi at the restaurant only has six legs.
That's precious.
So that's my favorite joke in this whole movie. And, like, me and, like, one other dude who lives in Nebraska totally got that.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah.
I do really remember those movies as a kid. I really love those movies. Like, my brother and I had them on VHS, and we would watch them over and over again. So.
No, they're pretty fantastic.
But, yeah, he shows up with this kid in a bag, and he's big, and this restaurant is clearly not appropriately sized for him.
No.
He keeps knocking everything over. But Boo gets out, and the whole restaurant just panics.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, there's just general widespread panic from there.
And so they run away and hide at the apartment with Boo, and they're all very scared of her.
Yeah.
And this is the first instance of her laughing and...
the light's surging.
Yes.
It's like a power surge.
So I did not pick up on that as a kid.
No.
And, like... I mean, I was much younger. I saw it in theaters.
I guess so.
So, and I mean, it's fine. It's not like a requirement to pick up on it. Like they mention it at the end.
Yeah.
Where like, he's like, and laughter is 10 times more powerful than screams. And so I'm like, all right, that's good. The way that they solved that there at the end.
Did you think it was just coincidental?
That the power surges was happening?
Yeah.
Well, like, at that point, the power surges wasn't plot important.
That's true.
You know, so I didn't, like, connect or register that it had happened and stuff. And later on, when it is important, it's just, I knew child noises.
Yeah.
Make the thing. And so I didn't really pick up, like, because very clearly laughter is better than screams.
Yeah.
You know, there's this point, like, in the door room where she screams, and it does a little bit, and then she laughs, and it does a ton.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a very clear plot point. It's like, ah, children's noise do the thing.
Yeah.
So, but it's much more obvious now that I'm grown and watching this. I'm like, all right, there you go.
I like in the scene where they're feeding her Fruit Loops from afar by, like, tossing them at her.
Yeah.
Then they get her into the bedroom by putting like a little trail of Fruit Loops.
It's very sweet. And it's very sweet, like, throughout this whole movie, where Sully goes from calling Boo an it to she, and then Mike takes longer but starts to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, this point in the middle of the movie where he's going back and forth depending on how angry he is at Boo. It's very, it's a subtle thing, you know, but it's very nice, a nice touch.
Yeah.
And a nice, believable touch.
So they have to go to work.
Yes.
They can't leave the kid. So they disguise her as a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty convincingly, honestly.
Yeah, that's some good craft work.
Yeah. Although I'm really sad because it implies that they destroyed his chair.
Yeah.
His poor chair.
I guess they just unupholstered it.
I guess it could probably be fixed. They insisted it's take your like distant relative to work day. And that Boo is Sully's cousin's sister's daughter, which wouldn't that just be your cousin's daughter? Your cousin's sister should still be your cousin.
I guess.
I don't know.
And they also, yeah, so the goal is to get Boo back to her door and into her own room again, and nobody ever knew.
Yeah.
That's the goal. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Randall... And, oh man, what's Randall's assistant's name?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. Well, Randall and his assistant are freaking out.
Yes, because they think that they let the kid into the world.
Yeah.
And they lost the kid.
Yeah.
Which they did. I mean, it's not untrue.
Yep.
So.
And Mike tries to fake the door.
Yes.
And Sully figures it out very quick. And this leads to the put that thing back where it came from, or so help me.
Yes.
Which I love.
Which is hilarious, and then gets more hilarious much later.
So much more hilarious.
In the credits / DVD special features when they just, you could watch them sing, put that thing back where it came from, or so help me.
Yep. Boo wanders off.
Yeah, Boo does that a lot.
Well, she's like two.
No, it's
if you don't pay attention, she's gonna wander off.
I mean, she's two, and then nobody in that world knows how to handle a 2-year-old child, or you know.
I'm just curious what 2-year-old monsters are like, because like she's in that little group, and they seem equally stupid, like you know, equally rambly, equally upset about things. So.
Well, like you know,
they're bachelors, though.
Yes, and Mike and Sully are also just living together, two swinging bachelors in. New York.
And
so, yeah, Boo wanders off and wanders into the trash, and Sully can't get there in time.
This whole sequence is really funny. Where he thinks Boo's in the trash compactor and he's just freaking out.
It's this weird thing where, like, you know it's fine, so you're not stressed out.
No, but he's so stressed out. It's so funny.
Yeah. So, it's very silly.
There's an awesome running gag with George as well that comes back up around here. George, he's the big, like, hairy monster that has the first, like, what is it, 2319?
Yeah, it's 2319 because it's the WS for White Sox, so the 23rd letter and the 19th letter of the alphabet.
That's silly.
I assume. I might also have read way too much into this movie for no reason.
Maybe you have. So, yeah, he had the sock earlier, and then Sully gets a bunch of Boo's stuff on him, and he stuffs it in a random locker in his George's locker. Poor George.
He has a hard time through this whole movie.
Yep.
And so, oh, is this... Has Boo gone to the bathroom yet? This is where...
Previously, yeah.
Yes, that's a pretty adorable scene.
It's really cute.
And it's a very sweet scene. Just this whole, maybe like 40-minute sequence of them running around the factory, and basically watching Sully learn to be a dad.
Yep, it's and really so, cute.
And like, so the Toy Story movies, especially 2 and 3, are a lot about being a parent. A lot about, you know, thinking about when your kids won't need you, learning of that and that aspect of it, and still wanting to be there for them when they don't need you anymore, and like, yeah, that's where like all the emotion comes from those movies. And so, like, you know, but this movie is also very much about like learning to be a parent, and then how much being a parent affects you, and like, it, you know, I think Pete Docter, who was a lot, you know, dealt a lot with this movie. I think this was a lot of his creative thought process. He's making Inside Out right now, or that's his, and you know, that's a lot about being a parent to a teenager.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's coming out right around the time, you know. You count back, he was probably the parent of like a 2 to 3 year old.
Yeah.
Around this time.
And now he's the parent of probably a preteen teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And so then there's a lot of like being a parent when your friends aren't parents yet, and like,
yeah,
you suddenly can't interact with your friends the way you once did, or on the regular basis that you once did, and that's, you know, puts a strain on your friendship, and, you know, being a friend to that, you can understand intellectually why,
yeah,
your friend might have different priorities, but it still hurts and is hard, difficult to deal with, and
yeah,
stuff. Which is all stuff I totally didn't get as a 6-year-old.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Yeah.
But it's all, like, it's so very clearly there.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, Pete Docter probably was dealing a lot with
a lot
how parenthood has changed his life, and
yeah,
how things, like, you know, his work and beating scare records, yeah, used to be really important, and how they're very unimportant all of a sudden when this child comes into his life.
Yeah, just how starkly his priorities have changed.
Yeah. So, it's very emotional all of a sudden.
Much emotion. This movie always makes me cry anyway, so that's extra added sadness. Thanks, Joel.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, this is also when she learns to say Mike Wazowski.
Mike Wazowski!
Which is pretty adorable.
So cute. So they meet up with Randall. To put,
yeah,
Boo back.
But Mike makes a deal with Randall to put Boo back. Sully doesn't trust him, and in trying to prove that it's legit,
Mike walks in there, and Randall just snaps him up.
And proves that it's not legit.
Yep.
And so, we discover that, I don't know if Randall invented it, or like his little henchman invented it.
The scream extractor.
Yeah, there's the scream extractor.
I don't know. Do they have like a team?
I don't know.
I don't know who's responsible for this contraption.
Who funds the James Bond situation there. And so he straps Mike into the scream extractor, and Sully has to come save him.
Yeah.
But then Sully wants to go and tell the boss, which is a totally reasonable thing to do.
Yeah.
And
he walks into the scream simulator, and Waternoose asks him to do a demonstration, and he scares the wits out of Boo.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
Which, again, like, it's all about your child seeing you for who you really are, and, like,
yep,
being terrified to reveal that to them and break that superhero dad, perfect parent,
yep,
thing that they'll see you as. And then, yeah, again, it's a whole movie's about parenthood. When did that happen?
I think it was there originally. We were just like 8.
I don't think that was there originally.
I think it was there.
Pretty sure I'm watching some sort of director's cut now.
They just cut out all the parts with Boo for the first time it's after Chelsea. It's just them running around crazy for no reason.
And so there's the twist that... God, what's that boss's name?
Water News.
I'm just going to be Crab Boss Man.
Crab Boss Man.
Banishes them.
Yep.
With the Abominable Snowman.
I mean, the Abominable Snowman. He's so cute.
Yes.
He made snow cones.
And so they just, they disagree with being banished.
It's a little strange.
Like,
this argument's a little bit weird. Because, like, I understand kind of what's going on, but they're also both, like, being a little bit irrational. Which I guess they're really stressed out, so that makes sense, but, like, it's so easily resolved that the whole fight just seems kind of pointless.
Well, so the thing is, like, they mentioned earlier in the movie, like, Bigfoot and Abominable Snowman and Loch Ness Monster are all monsters who have been banished, and that's why
they're,
you know, urban legends in our world. And so... they get banished and see the Abominable Snowman. And then they just kind of...
come back.
Unbanish themselves.
Yeah, I was confused as to why that hadn't happened previously.
Yeah, like... I don't know...
Also, I want to know what they did. What did they do? They got them banished.
Oh, Abominable Snowman, yeah. Etc.? I don't know what they did, but...
especially Loch Ness Monster. Who, like, sits down with Loch Ness Monster and is like, sorry, you gotta go. He's, like, huge. She's, like, huge, I guess.
But, like, you know... Noose Crab Boss Man.
Noose Crab Boss Man. That's totally his full name. Go with it.
He's the one that banished them. Like...
yeah.
Does he have say on who gets banished, or, like...
I don't know. That seems like kind of, like, a governmental decision, or it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Do they have a government?
I don't know, and, like...
is the government run by the energy company? Because, well, that seems like a weird decision.
Yeah, like, Monsters Incorporated is clearly, like, a private sector...
yeah.
...situation there. But, like, so did he go above and beyond, you know, his...
I don't know.
...you know, power, his political pull by, you know...
yeah.
Banishing them. And clearly, like, you would be banished at Monsters, Inc., because if you're getting banished, they have access to all the doors.
The doors, yeah.
So, also apparently there's a door sitting in the middle of nowhere in the Himalayas if you look hard enough.
Real hard, yeah.
So.
But, like, yeah, they just unbanish themselves very quickly.
Yeah, they just walk back through, and so.
Yep.
Okay. And so... they get her back in the world.
Sully starts fighting with Randall, and Mike shows up, and he doesn't know he's fighting with Randall because Randall's invisible, and he's, like, trying to have this whole conversation. And Sully's just, like, not responding the way he wants to. He's, like, dying. It's very silly.
It is very silly. And it's a good way to reconcile these characters.
Yep.
Because this whole movie's so funny.
Yep. There's, like, a little bit of a chase scene here, and Celia shows up, and she is really angry. And Mike just kind of gives up and tells her the truth, which is a good way to be Mike, being honest with your girlfriend. That's
nice. Yeah, good job.
And Celia announces that Randall's won the scare record to distract him by, like, everybody crowding around him. And then we get the door chase.
Door chase, which is such a cool bit of animation, that whole door room.
Why is this not a ride?
I don't know.
Why is this not a ride, Joel?
Or a video game level.
Or a video game level. Ride / video game level.
Yeah. No, I don't know. That'd be real cool.
I don't understand. Actually, it would probably be a really hard video game level. Can we keep it to a ride? I'm terrible at falling off stuff
in
video games.
Well, I mean, this is also clearly towards the end of the video game being based off this movie, so...
Yeah,
it'd probably be pretty difficult.
Somebody else can play that for me.
But it's a really cool bit. This is the bit where... wow, laughter's really powerful, because, like, one laughter powers the whole room of doors.
Yeah.
For, like, several minutes.
Yeah, for a while. Those lights stay on for a good long time.
Mm-hmm.
This is a cool chase scene, though, because they keep jumping out of doors. It's all very portally.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's a lot of fun. And then they eventually kidnap Randall and throw him into the trailer from Bug's Life.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the same trailer? Because I think it's the same trailer.
And the Pizza Planet truck's parked outside.
Delightful.
So.
And then they destroy the door.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that Randall can't get back, though, because they got back really easily. But yeah. He was hit with a shovel several times, so...
He was hit with a shovel. Also, I assume that that trailer's probably in the middle of nowhere.
Sure, it might take a while to find another door.
Yeah. And, you know, and also...
That doesn't seem like a big enough trailer to have a closet. I'm just saying. It looks like a you know, like, pull-along trailer that's got, like, one room and a kitchen.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Maybe they're, like, regular
clothes. I guess it doesn't have, like... It probably doesn't have a walk-in closet. But, you know, there's got to be somewhere that they put their clothes.
I guess so.
So...
Like a trunk.
I don't know. And so... They... After defeating Randall... They confront Waternoose and, trick him into basically revealing his whole plan on camera.
Yeah, in the simulation room.
Mm-hmm. So, at which point he's arrested, and then we reveal that Roz is number one this whole time.
at the CDA.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. She's got, like, a little cardigan and everything. It's very cute.
Yeah.
So now they have to send Boo back, and I'm going to shred her door, because she's, like, supposedly because she's seen too much. I mean, like, what do you remember from when you were two?
Well, I mean, they also can't have her being in, like, constant contact of the monster world,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Part of that.
I did notice she's got a little Jessie doll.
She's got a Jessie doll.
And she also has an Emo.
She also has an Emo doll. She also has the Luxo Jr. ball.
Yes. Yeah, she does.
Crammed all the references in that one room.
All of the toys. This scene is heartbreaking.
This scene is like, Toy Story 2 is supposed to have like the unbearable scene with Jessie.
I
think this is harder.
Hands down the worst.
And like, this one's really hard on Sully and like the knowing everything, but it's so much harder to watch her go and open the closet right after he leaves and to know that.
Oh!
Boo
so
has, like,
sad.
No actual concept of what's going on.
I think that this and Brave probably make me cry the hardest.
Yeah.
Just such sadness.
Like, this is just this... And, like... No, this was this wreck trying to watch this. And just, like, watching Boo. And, like, just there's no understanding of as to what is going to happen.
No.
And there's no way to get her to understand.
So
and she
sad.
Just has to, like, go and open the door afterward and realize it. And, like, they didn't have to show us that, but they did it anyway. Like, we could have followed Sully through the door and never known that.
Yeah.
But we didn't, so thanks, you guys.
Thanks. So they refurbish the factory to run on laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And, Mike rebuilds Boo's door.
Mm-hmm.
And then I cried some more.
That's the thing. So I'm sitting there at the end, and so the ending shot is him going through the door, and he looks at her, and she goes, "Kitty," and he makes this smile, and it ends. And I'm like, that's not a sad ending.
No, it's a very
happy ending, but it's not a happy ending, because, like, it's emotional.
You don't get, like, full closure. You just get a little bit. It's like...
That's the thing. It's like, it's not a happy ending. It's just... Knowing that there's gonna be a happy ending, which isn't the same.
Yeah.
And so, no, there's a lot of emotion packed into that. And knowing, like, he thought he would never get to see Boo again, and, like, having already made peace with that, but still not really made peace with that, because you can't make peace with that, because it's parenthood now, which wasn't there before, but now it's parenthood.
I think that our notes sum this up pretty well. Joel says, sob, 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 sobs in all caps, and mine says, BRB, crying forever. We're so good at notes, you guys.
By the way, we skipped over this, but now that they're doing stuff with... You know, laughter. Mike is now...
Mike is the one that's working, and Sully's
he's like
the assistant. I always kind of assumed that Sully was now running the company.
Yeah, Sully's the CEO now, because he has his tiny little tie.
I love his tiny tie.
But Mike is trying to do basically just a stand-up routine for this kindergarten kid, and this kid, they do like... Three or four cutaway shots to this kid. He's just got this confused look on his face.
He's just like, what are you talking about?
It's hilarious time.
It's so good.
This is a great movie.
It's so good.
Like, I think this is probably the most underrated movie.
I think, yeah.
And I mean, underrated in the way that Hunchback is underrated.
This was definitely my favorite as a kid, and now it's probably just barely my second favorite after Wall-E. It's so good.
Yeah.
I love the character design. The world is so colorful. It's just like a really, really solid constructed plot, and Boo is so cute.
Yeah.
And Sally is so fluffy. I love Monsters, Inc.
No,
it's like the best.
It's very coherent. It's cohesive. And this is one. And part of it is because I watched it as a kid in theaters,
mm-hmm.
and then literally did not watch it again until, years and years and years later.
Yeah, I was the same when this one came out.
Either at the very end of college or out of college. So it's, I mean, a lot of these movies, they work on so many levels. They work for kids and adults. But a lot of them, like, I evolved through it and, like, slowly picked up on stuff. Like,
yeah.
And so, like...
This one is how a much drastic this, change.
Well, how much it works better as, you know, as an adult now. It's like,
yeah.
Hits me so much harder than I think other ones do. But because of that, it's shockingly good.
It's so good. And it's so funny.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
I mean, maybe some of the other ones, but, like, it's easily their funniest one to date. And of the other Pixar movies I've seen, I'm struggling to find one that's funnier.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the full list. There's not that many.
So,
yeah, no, I think this is probably the funniest.
Yeah, I mean, they're all out and out funny, but, like, this one is heads and tails.
Like, I think if you were, like, 5, you might find Cars more funny, but I'm not 5, so.
So, no, just Monsters, Inc. is a just all-around solid movie and such a good, well-constructed, tight movie.
Yeah.
So, just A+ all around.
Yes, good job.
Next week we'll be doing Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Which I'm technically excited about.
I've seen Finding Nemo 80 million times.
Finding Nemo is amazing.
It's really good. It's beautiful.
It's
well constructed. The characters were so likable.
Yeah.
But I have seen it 50 million.
Both of us.
Probably 2 dozen times.
Both of us are the exact right age that this was the movie that was shown in school.
Anytime there was like any sort of substitute teacher mm-hmm. or like not enough work after exams when you just had nothing to do.
Yeah, I
have seen Finding Nemo so many times and in several languages.
Yeah, because this is the one where you went to Spanish class and they're like, all right.
Yep.
They're gonna watch this in Spanish. It's like, all right.
I have seen it in French.
Mm-hmm. So, and I've seen the front half of this movie a lot more than I've seen the second half of this movie.
Yeah, I also had it on DVD.
So
I watched it a couple of times.
Yeah.
So it was.
Well, I mean, that was the thing.
I like Finding Nemo.
No, again, I love Finding Nemo. It's a great movie.
We will probably not be as energetic about this one as others.
I am unfairly not looking forward to this one as much as other ones, and it's not the movie's fault at all.
I know.
And I'm going to enjoy it.
Yes.
It's so unfair to that movie.
I know.
And I know that.
I know.
And I'll have nothing but good things to say about it next week.
Probably.
Just right now, I'm like, all right. Here we go.
Buckle down and watch Finding Nemo.
But you know what?
Again, I could probably do it without watching it. We should do that. Just I'll do it without watching it, you do it while watching it, and see how much I remember.
Here's the thing. To be fair, when we did the other ones, when we did the Disney movies, Snow White was like, all right, let's go. We gotta
Snow
grind
White's
through
delightful.
This. And Snow White was amazing.
Yeah.
So
Fox and the Hound was like that for me, and it was the grind I thought it would be because it was so sad. Also, Random Bear.
I love Fox and the Hound. But all right, until next time, bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.